Being the oldest of three kids, my brother, my sister, and I, of course, came up with our own means of conflict management when we were kids, right? And in fact, it was pretty, I would say, Roman in its approach. You know, that old eye for an eye mentality. See, we always knew where the line was when we were interacting with each other. But we also knew when we crossed that line, of course, right? And so when that line was crossed, we immediately started offering up the pleasantries that would fix the situation. In this case, between my brother and I, it would turn. If I was wrestling with my brother or something and I accidentally clocked him with my elbow, you could see the tears already. Mark's nodding. He knows how this works. You could see the tears already welling. And before he could say a word, I'd say, "No, it's okay. Hit me," right? "Don't tell Mom. Hit me." It was a policy that I think worked for a very short period of time until my parents caught wind of what was going on. And it was at this point that my dad equipped me with a new system for navigating my brother. And what he told me was this: next time you get in conflict with your little brother, rather than immediately going on the defensive, putting fists up with one another, simply take your brother by his shoulders, put your foot behind his feet, and lay him on the ground and walk away. This was my dad's system for me to manage my brother. It cut down on the number of physical confrontations we had because I was able to simply walk away. And in an odd sense, it added a sense of civility and order to our household by minimizing such aggravated confrontations. Huh? Hearing Jesus' words to his friends and his followers this morning sounds a lot like an adoption of similar policies of conflict resolution. As Matthew tells it, Jesus here lays out a clear process by which individuals are supposed to take up their grievances with one another. "If somebody does you wrong," Jesus says, "go and bring it up in conversation with them, one-on-one. And if they don't listen to what you have to say at that point, go and get one or two others as witnesses and go try again. And if after that meeting, the party at fault still refuses to hear all of you out, then take the issue to the whole church. And if, even after amassing such a cloud of witnesses, the person still won't listen to you, let them be such as one of a Gentile or a tax collector to you. Let them be to you as someone with whom you would never be caught associating. Lay them on the ground and walk away." It's a straightforward set of instructions from Jesus. In fact, it almost feels oddly specific and out of character as far as instructions from Jesus are concerned. For once, clear, measurable, and accomplishable steps are conveyed by this Messiah as he instructs his followers on how to conduct themselves. Reading these instructions, it feels like Jesus is almost providing a rudimentary legal structure for his followers. "Take these steps, and you will have covered yourself in the process. If you meet with this, that, and the other person in this order, you will have established your case and placed liability and culpability with the opposite party." Can you picture this lawyer Jesus standing with his clients? Or even more, can you picture this Jesus presiding over the courtroom setting, making sure that the plaintiff has followed proper order and diligence before hearing their case? And again, maybe this is too straightforward. Perhaps this procedural outline from Jesus isn't simply a prescription for conflict. Perhaps there is more to this scene than just making a plan for holding the uncomfortable conversations that many of us would rather avoid. Because when I stop and I think about it, I don't think that's entirely what my dad had in mind when he set up the new practice for me. When he gave me the tactic of simply laying my brother down and walking away, I don't think he was trying to form an official system of behavior to ensure that I myself was held in the right of due process every time Curtis and I had a go of it. Nor do I think that he was simply trying to create a new environment for himself in which conflicts could be more readily resolved without parental intervention. Though perhaps that was a nice side effect for him. I think that maybe, just maybe, my dad had a longer vision for what this practice would do. Because by equipping me with this new tactic, it seems that my dad had constructed a new way for my brother and I to remain brothers to one another. Under our old system of operating, that you hit me, so now I hit you mentality, that eye for an eye system, we would have eventually grown resentful of one another. We would have seen each other as nothing less than the ire of our physical retribution for perceived wrongs. Over time, and with repetition, I wouldn't be surprised if this would have caused irreparable damage to our relationship. It would distance ourselves from one another, even beyond our years of adolescence. See, in the end, my system of setting my brother down and just walking away ultimately gave space for me to come back to my brother, to come back beyond the conflict with both of our fists now dropped to a more authentic space of interaction. The tactic with which my dad equipped me set my brother and I up for success in maintaining a much more healthy relationship with one another. It seems to me that that's exactly where Jesus is at this morning as well. Looking at his prescription for conflict resolution this morning should make it readily apparent that his structure isn't simply about creating a system of maintaining personal inculpability, but it's about maintaining the personal relationships in the midst of conflict. It's about maintaining structure and order within the community. It's about setting up a set of practices under which thorough steps are taken before any interpersonal ties are severed. It's not a terribly new concept for Jesus either. In fact, his new procedures seem to echo the sentiment that comes out of his scriptural tradition. It's what comes out of the Torah. See, while many of the religious leaders around him, especially the Pharisees, had taken the Levitical codes and laws as rites that needed to be fulfilled and practiced in and of themselves, Jesus' sentiment recognizes that God's whole intent in handing down the law to begin with was to maintain the social connections of the people of Israel. The imploring calls to care for the widow, to care for the orphans, to care for the aliens, instructions on how to resolve interruptions, all of these were meant to maintain the unity of God's people. It's the same realization that Paul comes to as well, as reflected in his letter to the Romans this morning. He writes, "Owe no one anything except to love one another. For the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. The commandments are summed up in this word," he says, "love your neighbor as yourself." Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Unless we think that such sentiment ended with Paul, the Holy Spirit, who is alive and active among us this morning, presents such opportunities for us today. Such God-given love is what prompts activities like God's Work Our Hands Sunday. It's a recognition that we are called to recognize and share God's love in tangible ways with those around us. Unless I'm mistaken, and I'm going to call him on the spot here because he didn't tell him I was doing this earlier, I imagine it's what drives John, the director of Love, Inc. over in Milton, Love in the Name of Christ. I imagine it's the same love that spurs you in the process by which you seek new ways to express God's love to those in our community who we might otherwise overlook. Huh? See, it's all about community and God. Jesus' practices, these Old Testament laws, Paul's imploring letters, they're all about recognizing one another as God's children. See, the truth has already presented itself. Each of you, each of all of us, have already been claimed by a God whose love surpasses all fathomable understanding. It's a radical level of love that would lead God to death on a cross to care for you. What follows from that truth, then, is the earnest desire of a God who wants us each to recognize that same loved status in one another. In each of our neighbors, God's desire is that we see yet another life worthy of God's love. Even if it takes gathering the community to repair strained relationships between individuals, the effort is worth it, in order that we might maintain that recognition of God's children. So can we do it? Grounded in our confidence in being claimed by God's love, can we leave this place and see others for who they are? Can we see those around us, even those with whom we might be in the midst of the throes of conflict? Can we see them as products of God's love and treat them accordingly? It's no small task. Some days it's going to be more difficult than others. But grounded in the love that God first gives us, we have been gifted at least the confidence to go out and make such radical love known. Make it known to those communities in which we're already a part. So let's get going. Let's demonstrate a radical love in community to a world that desperately needs to hear it.